If someone doesn't have bread to eat or a decent education, a decent job, decent wages, that's poverty.
God respects the poor. God remembers the poor. God helps the poor.
One of the biggest stumbling blocks for adults in poverty is access to health care. For me, the expansion of health care is a pro-life issue.
Moral dissenters must stand up again today, not just in our sanctuaries of safety, but we must carry the sanctuary into the public square.
We first told you about the 15-state Moral Revolution Tour, spearheaded by the Reverend William Barber of Moral Mondays and featuring some leading faith voices for social justice at the time of its launch back in April. Among those lending their names to the initiative is Sister Simone Campbell of the Network Lobby, the Reverend Dr. James Forbes Jr., Senior Minister Emeritus at Riverside Church here in New York City. It's been way too long, Jim, since you and I sat down on the air or off the air to have a conversation. So I'm really pleased that you were able to join us in the studio today and talk about this ambitious campaign. Welcome back to State of Belief.
It's good to be with you, Welton.
So let's start by you just briefly describing the idea behind the Moral Revolution campaign.
Well, the best way to do it, that is, to describe what it's about, is to use the words of Reverend William Barber II, who actually spearheaded the Moral Monday movement and is spreading it across the country. Well, this is what he said. He said, "Our social political process has been hijacked. Far too much of our national political discourse and activity has been poisoned by the dominance of regressive, immoral, and hateful policy directed towards communions of color, the poor, sick, or children, immigrants, women, voting rights, the environment, religious minorities." And he says, "We cannot remain silent. Our country is in need of a moral revolution of values to champion the sacred values of love, justice, and mercy in the public square." Now, this idea of revolution of values was not original with Reverend Barber. Both of us were inspired by the words of Dr. King, who, when he gave that speech at the Riverside Church in the speech against the war in Vietnam, he says, "If America is to be on the right side of the world revolution, she must undergo a radical revolution of values." And in my work with the Drum Major Institute, I've decided, okay, I've been around a long time. I've done a lot of boot training. Now that I'm about 80 years old and past, maybe I ought to get around to doing something. And part of what I want to do is to join with Barbara and Sister Blackman and Sister Campbell, because I think this nation desperately needs a revolution of values. And that's what this revival is attempting to do.
You know, Jim, I have to say, as long as I've known you, you were not far away from preaching about this revolution already, because it's been central to your work. Tell us a little bit about the launch of this program and how it's getting off the ground.
Well, we began April 3rd, the night before Dr. King's assassination, when he gave that speech in Memphis. Well, Riverside Church chose April 3rd of this year to launch our revival. So Tracy and I joined Reverend Barber, and we had prayer, and both of us preached. That was the launch. The next day, Reverend Barber went to a synagogue in Raleigh, which is the Temple Beth Or. Unusual, the rabbi says, "You know, I don't know too much about these revivals, but I certainly think we do need a moral revitalization." So he held his there. I went that next day to Alexandria, the Virginia seminary there, Episcopal Seminary, to talk about the same thing. Now, just recently, last Sunday, we were in Atlanta. There, we went to the St. Mark's United Methodist Church gathering, an interfaith group, had the strangest experience. A gospel choir from the synagogue. That was the first experience. I was a gospel choir from the synagogue there sang, and we had representatives to talk about how they had experienced the immorality of present policies adversely affecting the poor and the despised and those left aside. And Barbara and I both gave talks. Our next journey is going to be to Birmingham, Alabama. And from there, we're going to Tupelo, Mississippi. We are going to travel through at least 15 states between now and October. And we are attempting to use Monday, since it's identified with Moral Monday. It will be a Monday evening event. We are determined to interrupt the chatter about elections with at least concern about the morality that governs the quality of life in a nation.
Are you looking at the Moral Revolution campaign as potentially having more of an impact on people of faith and other citizens or on political leaders?
We believe that the power comes from the ground. And so our primary concern is to move people beyond mere religious identification to an active commitment to being agents of transformation. We think that we've got a whole lot of choirs across the country, but they've been singing out of tune. Or they have sung for personal edification and not looking at the systemic evils that continue to plague our cities and our communities. And so we hope that we will impact individuals. But if we impact sufficient numbers of individuals, clearly state legislatures will hear about it. So part of what we're being doing is we're going to be encouraging state action, state by state, perhaps in September, the last Monday in September. Maybe you should be looking forward to all of the states we go through and others to have actions, whether it's demonstrations with clergy in their garb, or whether it is a singing in, or whether it is a list of particulars that we wish the state legislatures to hear about. We work with the people, but we hope it will have political impact as it relates to the morality of policies. Reverend Barber keeps saying a budget is a moral issue. Policies with respect to health care, moral. Living wage, moral. Educational opportunity, moral. Infrastructure building and union strength to encourage fairness towards wages, moral. We're not just talking about personal morality. We're really not going to invade your bedroom too much, and we're not going to talk about whether you drink or whether you chew. But we want to talk about what we as a people do together in regards to the least amongst us and how we live up to the American dream. Not in terms of those who are advantaged, but those who have been left out. We hope that the biblical morality will not just be personal, it will be systemic as well.
I'd like for you to tell our listeners what you and Reverend Barber are going to talk about specifically. What are you going to be saying from a pulpit or from a lectern that you want people to hear?
Yeah. Reverend Barber talks about America is, in Ezekiel's mind, needing a transformation. The anger, the alienation, the anxiety makes us almost feel to the rest of the world that we must be a hard-hearted group of people. He is saying in his sermons, we need heart transformation. The Lord to take out the old stony meanness, incivility dynamic, and replace it with the heart of flesh, of caring, respect for one another, tolerance for one another, upbuilding rather than tearing down. He will say that what we got a heart problem. And he says we morally have heard code blue. We're in trouble. And so he thinks we need to bring a defibrillator. He says that's what the revival is about. It is moral defibrillation. And that if the nation gets that shock, we like to talk about we're going to make the nation great again. We need a great awakening. That's the way we're going to be great, rather than each party, each group attempting to sort of promote itself. We are a nonpartisan movement. We want to appeal to Republicans, Democrats, Independents, and we want to appeal to Muslims and Christians and Jews and Sikhs and Buddhists. We believe that the whole nation needs to be alerted to the fact that apart from moral fiber, there is no common element that holds us together as a nation. Without a sense of national purpose, we cannot fulfill our destiny as the people who were supposed to be the champions of freedom and justice around the world.
Jim, you've been involved in faith-driven civil rights and social justice campaigns for decades. Position us. How does this moment in our history compare to some of the earlier struggles we've been through?
Because we are in this revival, I want to talk about God loves us enough to alert us to the decline of the morals that could hold this nation together. So I would like to think of it as a time for the recovery of hope. And the reason we're going to do it is because things look so bleak. The president is talking with leaders around the world. They are nervous about us. They're not just worried about the candidates. They're worried about the people who seem to want to be stirred up with anger, who seem to want somebody who shouts with disregard for people who are different and who are in some way considered less worthy of respect. The nations are worried about us. I think God is worried about us. But I think God loves us enough to give us a chance to stop, and while we're listening to all the campaign chatter, to listen to voices of reason that are rooted and grounded in hope that when we can discover the difference between right and wrong again, when we can agree about what's just and what's unjust, and when we can become willing to sacrifice for the greater good as an evidence of our own self-interest, enlightened self-interest now instead of greed or the giants that Dr. King talked about, racism, militarism, materialism. Maybe we can talk about, no, self-interest is to learn to care for your brother, to care for your sister, to look at our infrastructure, to see what we can do, and to hoard the resources so that only 1% will have most of the wheat in the barn? No. We are in a period of hope. Why? Because it's dark enough for us to know some changes had better take place if we will have a nation that we can bequeath to our young people who are emerging in these times.
When you look at how things have played out in our nation during this election cycle so far, what troubles you most about that?
The thing that troubles me most, and you might find this surprising, I would have said racism. And that does trouble me. I think that most of the stuff we are experiencing, if you keep looking at it, white people are nervous about the fact that Obama was elected one time. He was elected a second time, but that's not the real problem. The demographics that elected him fulfills the prophecy that we will no longer be a nation where white supremacy will rule and where white privilege will be actually the ticket to success. White people are nervous about the fact that the lie has been revealed. White supremacy ideology was fundamentally an evil concoction designed to advantage some people over against others. They are so scared. How can they survive in a nation where they have to give up what they have actually commandeered over the years for centuries? And all of a sudden it's now clear that to continue to enjoy white privilege is to make a commitment to mendacity forever. They're scared. Much of what we see is a reflection of that fear. But that's not the main concern I have, Gaddy. My main concern is about materialism. God is becoming no longer the creator, but money is God in America. It controls campaigns. It controls industry. Industry can kill people for profit with impunity. It messes up the climate. Money, people for the sake of money can sell their drugs illegally, or they can sell them pharmaceutically. But you follow the money. I am so scared that the true God has a strong competitor in this society. And Dr. King talked about materialism. My greatest fear is that money in high places or the longing for more money all over the place or the resistance to taxes that are fair, any way you look at it, when you want to figure out people's attachment to material things has trumped their commitment to humanity, to decency, to kindness, or even to the idealism of freedom and justice for all. So that unless materialism is looked at seriously from a moral perspective, we are sinking down. And hence the violence, which is primarily used for some for anger, but for many to preserve their resources in the face of the challenge for a more equitable distribution of resources. Isn't it amazing? The three giants that Dr. King talked about all work together. Race and greed and violence and militarism. So you asked me what the one thing, and I told you, there's no one thing. They're all wrapped up together. But right in America today, money rules. And when you got money as your God, ruthlessness is easily the order of the day.
Hope.
You see, hope is about how our pilgrimage ends, H-O-P-E, how our pilgrimage ends. What I have discovered is that hope comes from my old Bible belt. There was a text that says, "For we know that all things work together for good to those who love the Lord and who are called according to God's purpose." My hope is that we will hear the voice of God calling us to be the beloved community. And if we hear that, then I've got hope that we can be the America that we like to sing about, like we like to dream about. That's my hope. Lord, help us to hear your voice. And that's what this revival is all about.
The Reverend Dr. James Forbes, Jr. is the Senior Minister Emeritus at Riverside Church in New York City. Together with other prominent faith leaders, he's taking part in the 15-state Moral Revolution Tour launched by Reverend William Barber of North Carolina. Jim, I thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, your heart, your patriotism, and your faith. Thanks so much for coming on to be with us again on State of Belief Radio.
My pleasure, Welton.